Mark Cuban.
How you do anything is how you do everything. If you're not, if you don't pay attention to detail on the little things, you're not going to be in the habit of paying attention to detail for the big things.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Hey, he wears his hat backwards. Well, I wear my hat backwards because my dad had a fro and I wanted to wear his hat. And if I put his hat on at age 6 and, you know, he's got a 8.5 and I got like a little 5, it's not going to really stay on my head.
Jeannie Buss.
Thank you for having me. What a nice turnout. It's good to see everybody.
John Smoltz.
Is if you don't have the imagination and the willingness to fail or not being afraid to fail, I don't think you can be truly great.
Candace Parker.
I have so much hope for this generation coming up that have grown up with women in sports, in leadership roles, on television, speaking about sports, speaking knowledgeably about sports.
Pau Gasol.
To me, all the work that I've done, all the humanitarian work that I've done, has always given me great perspective, has allowed me to keep my feet on the ground, and has really put and reminded me what's truly important.
Damian Lillard.
That was for Seattle.
Just to name a few. Welcome to Sports Business Radio. Now, here's Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio, powered by our friends at Malka Sports. Find more about them online at malkasports.com. Janet Evans, 4-time Olympic gold medalist swimmer and chief athlete officer for LA 28. She's going to join me for an in-depth conversation today. She discusses her role as chief athlete officer for the LA 28 Olympics and Paralympics. She was at the 1984 Olympics and was in that crowd. And then she became a prolific Olympic swimmer. She helped Muhammad Ali light the torch in 1996 in Atlanta. She has a distinguished Olympic career. I don't think they could have found anyone better than Janet Evans to be the chief athlete officer for the LA 28 Games. So I think you'll enjoy the conversation with her. And I ask her about the news this week with the U.S. women's national team settling with U.S. soccer, that landmark agreement. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes, but I get her reaction as well. I'm joined by executive producer Brian Griggs. Griggs, how are you?
I'm doing great. And it's just always fun to have an Olympian on. And like you said, she has a stellar resume that goes way back in the day and lots of experiences. And I agree with you. I think she's going to be awesome for LA 28.
Yeah, I think, you know, she was racing as a teen in the Olympics and did 3 Olympics. And like I said, she's great for this job. The other reason that she's coming on with me is they're going to have surfing, skateboarding, and sport climbing in the LA 28 Games. So if any games deserve to have those 3 sports introduced, it's Southern California. So that's going to be cool to have those in the mix as well.
Yeah, fun new sports. I love how the Olympic Committee and the Olympic crew keeps adding some new, new sports that we haven't seen or haven't. People don't even know a lot about surfing and a lot about some of these other sports like sport climbing and all that. So excited to see some new sports be part of the games.
All right. I want to tell you about a new partner for Sports Business Radio. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted more energy and I was tired of trying to find the right multivitamin or create the right smoothie or salad every day. I'm a busy person, so I needed a solution that covered all of my daily nutrition bases. So what is Athletic Greens? With one scoop every morning, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, while still tasting good. It supports better sleep quality and recovery and also supports mental clarity and alertness. Your subscription comes with a year's supply of vitamin D, which is so important to add in these winter months when we don't get as much sunlight, especially here in Oregon. It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Additionally, for every purchase, Athletic Greens donates to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need. I love this, including No Kid Hungry here in the U.S. In 2020, Athletic Greens donated over 1.2 million meals to kids. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 5-star reviews. All right, we're going to make this easy for Sports Business Radio listeners. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/SBR, like Sports Business Radio. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/SBR to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So Griggs, let's now look at some sports business headlines of the week. I mentioned a couple minutes ago, this is a landmark deal. The U.S. Women's National Team and U.S. Soccer have reached a $24 million settlement regarding equal pay claims. The deal will end one of the most prominent pay cases in sports history. U.S. Soccer has committed to providing equal pay going forward for the U.S. women's and men's teams. I am very excited about this. As a parent to a daughter, as someone who has had many U.S. Women's National Team members on this show, I think this is a great day. It's sad that it took 6 years to get to this day. But look, to me, this is like when Wimbledon said, we're doing equal pay for men and women. And we've talked many times on this show, the U.S. Women's National Team produces much better results than the U.S. Men's National Team. They should, in fact, be paid more money. But I guess for now, we'll take the equal pay. It's a big day. And, you know, congrats to Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe and Lindsay Horan, who's been on this show. Some of the people who really dug in on this. And I think they've laid the groundwork for future women and future U.S. Women's National Team members.
Yeah, like you said, took too long to get there, but hey, we're there now. It's a big landmark deal. It's moving forward in the right direction. And like you said, I think, you know, props to all these, the members of the U.S. women's team that went after this, fought for it, and finally got the deal done after 6 years. So they've got to feel good today. It's a big day. I think it's a great, great step moving forward for women's sports for sure.
All right, let's talk about the NBA All-Star Weekend. I don't know, did you have a chance to watch, Griggs, any of it?
I did. I watched the whole NBA Saturday night and then kind of in and out with the game on Sunday.
All right, let's start with NBA Saturday night, All-Star Saturday night, whatever they want to call it now. It just doesn't have the same energy that it used to have. And, you know, I'm a kid who grew up with Dominique and Michael Jordan competing in the slam dunk contest. And the best dunkers were competing, Dr. J, Larry Nance. Now, you know, no offense with Cole Anthony and his Timberlands, but like, it's just not the same. So I don't know if they need to go out and get a sponsor who's going to put up $5 or $10 million. I don't know what it's going to take to get the best dunkers involved, but this was not it. And I think it kind of ruined Saturday night. The 3-point contest was okay. I mean, it's kind of odd seeing Karl Anthony Towns win. The skills competition was okay, but Saturday night just wasn't great for me. What did you think?
I 100% agree. And like you mentioned, some of those names, Dr. J and Dominique and Clyde the Glide, sitting there on as the judges, I'm like, that's what I want to see. I want to see the stars out there dunking. I thought it was the worst dunk contest in a long time. I thought there was no star power. The dunks were awful. Tons of misses. They couldn't hit the dunks. I think at one point Reggie said, why didn't they put the dunk contest first? Let's end with the 3-point or something that has some stars in it. So I think it was a big letdown for me, the dunk contest. Everything else was okay. I like the addition of the three teams that played, the rookies and the Cavs. That was kind of cool, but overall, not good.
All right, so I think we're in agreement. All-Star Saturday night needs to be rethought, and you need to go get sponsors who put up more money to get the best players involved. Now, as disappointing as Saturday night was, I was just a little kid. I was like an 8-year-old watching Sunday night with the NBA 75 team, and the game itself turned into a great game. But, you know, it's just interesting when Michael Jordan walks into the building, there's a different feel, and it elevated everything for NBA 75. And he earlier in the day had been at the NASCAR race, the Daytona 500. And we talked about that on our show last week. He owns a team and it's Bubba Wallace's team. And he was there, so you're like, wow, that's really disappointing. Most people consider him the greatest player of all time, and he won't be at the NBA 75 celebration. So they're introducing at halftime of the All-Star game all of the NBA 75 members who were there in Cleveland. And lo and behold, the last one who comes out is Michael Jordan. And you're like, okay, he made it. And then you start to see his interactions with LeBron and Jerry West and Magic Johnson and all the other greats that are there. And you're like, this is what it's all about. And if he wasn't there, I think it would have had a much different feel and would have been much more disappointing than the fact that he was there. What did you think, Griggs?
Yeah, I mean, the 75 was cool. I love the idea that they did this year with all the greats. But yeah, I agree. I mean, Jordan, he is the GOAT. He commands the stage. He walks in the room and everybody just like bows down because he's the guy and he brings the energy up, his laugh and smile. He's just energetic. It gets everybody pumped up. I think it changed the whole vibe. And yeah, it was a fun game too. I mean, it is fun, those guys. I mean, Steph Curry, 16 threes, shooting half court shots in the game. It's fun to watch. They're like little kids out there. I love it.
Him getting going, it elevates everyone else and it brings an energy to the arena. And you just wanted him to keep hitting threes. Like, I think everyone was like, I want to see Steph Curry hit 20 threes in a game. He hit 16, which was phenomenal. And you know, it was fun to see LeBron hit that last shot in Cleveland. You know, he kind of built that arena de facto, and you know, there were a lot of compelling storylines. But to me, you know, we're never going to see the NBA 75 together like that again. The next time they do this, you know, most of those guys are going to be passed on. It was sad that Kobe wasn't there, obviously. And there were some other people, you know, Larry Bird just wasn't there. That was the other thing that was kind of corny. So they're introducing them and the people like Larry Bird that weren't there, they have them like waving to a camera and they all had like different waves. Scottie Pippen had like a weird wave and Larry Bird had a wave. And it just was a little bit awkward that they decided like, okay, the people that aren't here, let's just have them give this cheesy wave and they're going to have a nothing backdrop behind them. And it looks like, you know, they're just at their home waving to us.
Yeah, that was a little bit corny. I agree. There was some parts that kind of lagged throughout the whole production of it where there was some down spots and some dead spots where it was like, okay, maybe should have thought this again. But yeah, I agree. It was cool. The 75, like you said, you know, next time they do this, it'll be whatever, the 100th year, the 150th year, and you're not going to see all these guys. So fun to see a majority of them there and the big names like Jordan too. That's cool.
Yeah, and I grew up in the Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird era. So, you know, to see them interacting. And then it was really cool to see like Steph Curry and Damian Lillard interacting with Isaiah Thomas and Magic Johnson. And, you know, it was kind of like the past with the present. And again, to listen to Steph Curry and Dame Lillard and some of the guys from today talking about the chills they got being on that stage with those legends, that was pretty neat. And then Griggs, we find out potentially the beef, the 10-year-old beef between Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett might be over. They took a picture, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, that Paul Pierce posted on his Instagram. You know, why are these guys beefing 10 years later? I tweeted out, can Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan please get together at this event in a room and settle their decade-long beef? And, you know, life's too short. Look at Kobe's not with us anymore. Like, figure it out. But it was good to see people working things out and coming together and, you know, see Kareem talk to Karl Anthony Towns and some of the younger players of today. I just thought it had a really great feel to it. So well done, NBA, on the NBA 75 halftime thing. I was excited for the second half, but I was still like, oh my gosh, that was so cool when MJ and Magic got together or MJ and LeBron got together. I mean, how many pictures of that were there? Because they're just not in the same building very often. And by the way, I tweeted out a picture, Griggs, of the first ever meeting between Michael Jordan and LeBron James. I was there. I was 5 feet away. It was in 2003 at the Jordan Capital Classic in DC. They were doing photos and lo and behold, Michael Jordan and LeBron James met for the first time. And now you see that embrace at the All-Star game. And, you know, most people think they're two of the greatest players ever. And it was just cool. Like, I felt really old watching that.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was, yeah, I agree. The halftime show was really cool. And just those iconic pictures, like you said, the OGs meeting the new Gs, you know, and, you know, Dame and Steph talking to these idols they grew up watching to be in the NBA. And here they are playing the NBA, get to meet them all on the same stage. It was really cool. Good vibe. Nice job, NBA. And that 75 year diamond basketball is pretty money, too.
Yeah, I could see you blinging that around a little bit, putting on your Roan gear and dribbling that thing around a little bit. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be scared to dribble it because, you know, I don't want to shatter the diamonds. But, man, I'd love to hold that thing. It looks awesome.
I mean, do you think those are real diamonds or is that just like bling?
I would like to think they are, but they probably are. But maybe there's a few, you know, sprinkled in that are real.
I mean, I almost wonder if it's like, you know, the Super Bowl trophy or the Stanley Cup where it's the real diamonds. And, you know, you've seen all these pictures this whole year with celebrities and NBA players with that ball. Maybe there's someone with white gloves that walks around and holds the NBA diamond studded ball. And it really is diamonds.
Yeah. Our crack SBR staff needs to get on that and find out and confirm if it is completely real 100% diamonds.
All right. So I've been playing Underdog Fantasy. They're the official gaming partner of Sports Business Radio. They're the fastest growing fantasy app ever released with investors that include Mark Cuban, Kevin Durant, Adam Schefter, and Jared Goff. I played some NBA All-Star game Underdog on the over-unders. Didn't do so well on that because I thought that Jokic and Luka were going to have more points than they actually did. Same with Ja Morant. So I went over on all three of those. They were all under. So I got skunked on my Underdog Fantasy NBA All-Star Game edition. But it's always fun. And like you've said before, it makes it a little bit more fun to watch a game when you've got a couple bucks on it. The Underdog Fantasy app is available at underdogfantasy.com on iOS and on Android. Once you've downloaded the app, you can draft your team in minutes to win real cash prizes. Underdog's primary draft-based game is best ball, which is an innovative form of season-long fantasy that requires no management after the draft. I like that. Participants simply draft their 20-player teams, and each week they receive the points at each starting lineup spot for the players who scored the most points. There's no worries about setting your lineup, making trades, or working waiver wires to deal with. You just draft your team and that's it. Underdog also offers player pick'em games, including rivals, which is head-to-head matchups, and over-unders, as well as daily, weekly drafts, battle royale tournaments, and more. So we've got a special offer for Sports Business Radio listeners. New users who sign up get up to $100 matched on their first deposit when they use the promo code SBR, like Sports Business Radio, SBR. So download the app at underdogfantasy.com, then enter the promo code SBR, and you'll get that $100 to play with if you deposit $100. So anything up to $100, Underdog Fantasy will match. Again, underdogfantasy.com, enter the promo code SBR. All right, coming up next, Janet Evans, four-time Olympic gold medalist swimmer. She is the chief athlete officer for LA 28. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. My guest is Janet Evans, four-time Olympic gold medalist swimmer. She's the chief athlete officer for LA 28. You can follow her on Twitter at Janet Evans. The LA 28 Games will mark Los Angeles's third time hosting the Olympic Games, previously hosted in 1984 and 1932, and the first time hosting the Paralympic Games. Los Angeles is expected to host more than 15,000 athletes in 2028. Janet, thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
You're welcome, Brian. It's good to be with you. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, a longtime admirer of your career from afar. Just incredible feats in the pool and out of the pool. So it's a pleasure to have you on. Why don't you tell us how you first got involved with this effort for the LA 2028 Summer Olympics?
Sure. Well, it actually started about 6.5 years ago, and we have about 6.5 left. So I'm at the halfway mark. Los Angeles, back in 2015, late summer 2015, took over the domestic bid from the city of Boston. Boston was supposed to bid for the 24 Olympics and Paralympics, and Los Angeles stepped in when they had some problems. So we took over their bid and started bidding for the 24 games. So I came on to the LA 24 team actually, as the director of athlete relations, in the sense that when we were bidding, we needed to understand what the games would look like for the athletes of the world when they came to Los Angeles. So, you know, spent about 2 years on the bid team, you know, developing our plan for the athletes, understanding things like what the village would look like, how their transport would run, what programming we could give to the athletes above and beyond just giving them venues, and presented that to the International Olympic Committee. And through a series of happenstance, which is actually a great thing, we were awarded the 28 games. And my role morphed from there, which became the chief athlete officer. And now all of those things we put together during the bid and all of those grand ideas and amazing things we wanted to do for the athletes that were, you know, in our minds, we are now getting to do and implement. So it's a fantastic opportunity to make the 28 games in Los Angeles. You know, it's going to be an incredible games, but we're hoping to make it a games for the athletes like they've never experienced before. So that's our goal.
Janet, the thing that must be so difficult is, so you just outlined like when this process started with the bidding, and you're bidding on something that's going to happen like 12 years later, the world could look completely different. How do you try and imagine everything so far out into the future so that when you're making that bid, it's as accurate as possible?
Yeah, well, I think that's an interesting question, Brian, because the thing that we really, you know, we would giggle about with technology, right? And I'd be like, okay, you know, we're going to do this. And they'd be like, yeah, you're going to be able to do more than that because we don't know what it is, but there is going to be technology. But look, I think, you know, what we did during the bid and we are going to continue to do now that we feel like we can get out in front of people is, you know, we talked to athletes. We did town halls. We had meetings where we would say to the athletes, tell us about your experience. What were your, you know, what were your things you loved? What were things you maybe didn't love? Right. And so we heard a lot you know, I want my friends and family to be there to celebrate. Right. We want, you know, more opportunity to meet with athletes. And so we kind of based our plan around that, knowing that ultimately the technology would allow us to do really cool things. And at the end of the day, you know, planning a game, the Olympics and Paralympics, is venues and transport and village and food. So, you know, some of that always remains the same. But look, there's changes all the time. Look at what happened to the Tokyo Games. So, you know, we're always ready to pivot. We're always thinking about what ifs, and we're always having alternative plans.
As I mentioned earlier, four-time Olympic gold medalist swimmer, what was your experience like when you were an Olympian, and how have you brought that forward to this role as chief athlete officer?
Yeah, you know, I think that my games, you know, I went to 3 Olympics. I was young at my first games. I was in high school. I think that I don't remember it. Do you know what I mean? It's like when you're at a heightened sense of, you know, of life, you don't necessarily remember it. So to me, my 3 Olympic games were 16 days and they were amazing. And some of them I swam well. One of them I didn't swim too well. I, you know, had these incredible experiences, but I kind of came home and thought, well, now what? Right?
Like, yeah.
Now what? And so this is something we talk about a lot at LA 28, which is what can we do for athletes when the games are over? What legacy will athletes have besides really cool memories and maybe a medal or two, right? And a great, you know, some great shirts, right? Like what are we going to give them? So to us, we think about, you know, career transition. We think about, you know, allowing technology to help us with mentorship programs around the globe once the games are over. You know, we think about things like that because the Olympics go fast and you train your whole life for it. And then all of a sudden it's over, right? And so I think that, you know, we're really talking about leaving a legacy that's human. And when you think about Los Angeles and our games, you know, our city is ready made for the games. Think of the incredible venues we have from SoFi to the Coliseum, which will be the first venue in Olympic history to be used 3 times. And, you know, to the Rose Bowl, to, you know, Dignity Health Center. So we have these incredible venues. So a lot of our legacy, especially for the athletes, is going to be what we like to call human legacy and what we're going to do for them. You know, what the LA 28 games will bring to them above and beyond great venues and great food and a great village.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I've had Olympians like Gracie Gold, Carolyn Joyce, Ryan Murphy on this show, and they've all talked about, you know, when the Olympics are done, then what? And, right. You know, Gracie Gold really went into depth on mental health. And she was part of that documentary on HBO, The Weight of Gold. And, you know, I just think that's really an important part that's probably changed a lot since you were an Olympian, where we're looking at mental health and we're looking at nutrition and diet and analytics and all of these things that we weren't looking at 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. And you know what? Well, yeah, we talk about it, right? And 20, 30 years ago, we were never allowed to talk about it, right? And so, I mean, and that's the great thing about being a part of this organization, the LA 28, is we talk about it every day and we talk about what we can do to help. Because listen, I'm the first to tell you, you know, you finish your Olympic or Paralympic career and you say, then what, right? Now what? Like, what do I do? And so, you know, we have a great program at LA 28. It's our LA 28 fellowship program. So we bring in every 6 months, we bring in 4 Olympians or Paralympians. It's a 12-month job. They rotate between 2 different departments in our organization. And, you know, the ultimate goal is to have them gain work experience and maybe be hired at our organization or move on to something that they feel they have an interest in. But we're exposing athletes who, you know, don't have experience to, you know, working at an organizing committee. And, you know, some athletes say to me, well, I don't have a college degree or I've never had a job. And I say, that's better for me, right? We want athletes who just need this initial experience and something to put on their resume. So, you know, I know that's a very small drop in the bucket, but we're really trying to understand how to impact those athletes' lives beyond the field of play, for sure.
Well, I think you're the perfect chief athlete officer with your experience and your knowledge. I've had Kathy Carter on this show. I know Casey Wasserman a little bit. Did you know them before this? Like, who was the person in the organization that was like, we want you to be the chief athlete officer?
Well, it was, so that the initial going back to 2015, it was Casey, right? And so, you know, it is an honor to work for him. He is an athlete person, right? And so that's why I really think this organization, well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but it just comes from the top, right? We are an athlete driven organization. And you know, what he said to me was, we want an athlete to lead the charge of what we're doing for athletes, right? Who
right.
knows better than an athlete about our greatest stakeholder. So yeah.
All right, I want to ask you about some sports that are going to be included in the LA 28 Olympic Games that haven't been included before, it's my understanding. So surfing, skateboarding, and sport climbing are going to be included in the LA 28 Games. It seems perfect that in Southern California, those 3 sports would be included. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So the International Olympic Committee at the start of the Beijing Games, so probably about 2 weeks ago now, voted to have, we call them the 3 S's, sports, climbing, skating, and surfing in our Olympic Games. And we couldn't be more thrilled. I mean, we really do feel like these 3 sports really kind of, you know, they embrace what Los Angeles is, right? Like, you know, urban and young and I mean, surfing in Southern California, right? I mean,
right.
So we're very excited. You know, my 12-year-old's been outside on his skateboard every night, like waking up the neighbors, you know, with his like headphones in his ears. And so, you know, I think that's the great part about the Olympics and the Paralympics is they inspire generations, and to bring more fans into the Olympic and Paralympic movement is amazing. And you know, we want these young kids wanting to go out and skate at 10 o'clock at night and wake up the neighbors, right? Because this is what we want our kids to do. So we're very excited about these 3 sports and the fan base that exists here in Southern California and the exciting opportunities we will be able to give these athletes when they come to LA for the games.
So clarify what sport climbing is. I've had Alex Honnold from Free Solo on this show, and you know, he talked about how this was going to become an Olympic sport eventually. Is that what it is? I mean, not free soloing, but is it rock climbing? What is sport climbing?
Well, you're talking to a swimmer, so with all due respect, right? Like it was so, you know, I watched it keenly in Tokyo last summer, and Nathaniel Coleman, who won a silver medal for Team USA, actually just, I'm going to digress here for 1 second and I'll come back to it. Nathaniel Coleman created one of our new emblems. So I don't know if you know that the LO28 emblem is non-static. It's an A that represents, it's an L, and then we have, you know, athletes and community leaders creating A's that represent what Los Angeles means to them. So in honor and to celebrate sport climbing and surfing and skating being added to the games, we asked Nathaniel to create his own A. And his A is very cool. It looks like a rock face, right? But, you know, it's been fun to bring him into the mix. You know, we deal with a lot of athletes every single day. We talk to a lot of athletes. So to have a new sport come in has been really fun and exciting for our entire team. But when I watched it in Tokyo with my layman's understanding of it, they are speed climbing, right? So they're, you know, they're racing their competitor next to them, a little bit like swimming.
Okay.
You know? So get to the wall first, but I think it's to get to the top first. My wall is, you know, a different wall, but we all try to get to the wall first, right?
That's yes, definitely. Well, thank you for explaining that for our audience.
Yes, I hope I did okay.
No, you did. You did great. You did great. Okay. All right. I want to ask you about women's sports and the growth of women's sports. It's interesting that I'm having you on today because we just found out that the U.S. Women's National Team and U.S. Soccer have settled their 6-year-long discrimination suit. U.S. soccer players are going to be awarded about $22 million. And there's the promise of equal pay with the U.S. men's national team going forward. Again, I know it's a different sport, but as a prominent woman athlete, this has got to be a landmark day, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And I did see the news in the rush of my, you know, crazy Tuesday morning here at my house. So I haven't dug into the article yet, but I really think it is it's a landmark day. I think it's an amazing, you know, it's amazing for female in sport. And, you know, it's funny because I have a 15-year-old daughter who, you know, is a swimmer. Not sure how that happened, but she's a swimmer. She swims at a fairly elite level and, you know, wants to swim in college. And, you know, for me as a female athlete to watch, you know, the experiences that she gets to have because she's an athlete and what she's learned and the discipline and the determination that comes with it. And so, you know, look, I think it's an amazing day. I think that all, you know, women should have equal opportunity in sport. And for me personally, I always did. But, you know, watching the women's soccer team and their fight in this, it was amazing. And I'm really happy for them. And it's a landmark day for women's sports. It really is. And long may it live, right? So it's amazing.
What do we still need to do to grow women's sports? I'm watching the WNBA, the NWSL, obviously U.S. Women's National Team. More sponsors are coming on board. They're getting better media deals so more people can watch the games. What else do we need to do to increase the power of women's sports?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you look at our Olympic teams, I think the Beijing team this summer or this winter was, I think it was like, you know, almost even with male and female members, right? I think there were a couple less female members than male members. But if you look at our performances, and especially at the summer level, the females are always winning the more medals.
Yeah, so it's true.
We always celebrate that. So, you know, I think it's continued support at the grassroots level, continued support at the NCAA level. I know, you know, the NGB I'm most affiliated with is U.S., which is U.S. swimming is very, you know, focused on that. And I think it's just supporting them. I think it's getting out there. It's watching those games. It's being a part of it. It's, you know, I just think it's having you know, people in the media like you talk about it and promote it and be a part of it. And so, you know, I love that I have a female athlete in my house, right? Like I love it. And you know, my parents weren't athletes. And I think for them to put their daughter in a sport and allow her to reach the highest levels, you know, in the early 70s, mid 70s, I'm not going to age myself, you know, speaks volumes, for that generation. And certainly it's something that I've continued to do with my child. So I think promoting us, you know, talking about it, you know, celebrating victories like today for the women's soccer team is just so important to keep the conversation going.
I'm really interested in your thoughts as a parent now to an elite athlete. You were an elite athlete. You just mentioned you have a 15-year-old daughter. I have a 17-year-old daughter who's involved in athletics as well. So I watch, you know, what she goes through. And as a parent, it's so much different now than it was when we were coming up. Like I said, diet, analytics, the practice schedule, there just seems to be a lot of things, mental health, that we weren't really paying attention to or looking at. So, you know, as someone who's got all this experience as an Olympic athlete, now with your own daughter, how are you parenting her?
It's interesting. I was just talking to my husband about this last night. You know, it's funny because she, you know, she does morning workouts, right? Like we're, you know, she's in high school, and I, you know, we took a couple of days off this weekend to go skiing, right? In my time, A, we never skied, and B, you never took a workout off. Mm. And so, you know, I kind of come at it from the point of view of, she is a very good athlete. She has one childhood. I don't want all of her memories of childhood to be spaced down in the swimming pool, right? So, and one would think that for me, who did spend my childhood face down in the swimming pool and reached enormous success because of it, that I would want the exact same thing. And I think as I watch our athletes at the games, you know, as I watch our young women grow, you know, I'm very focused on mental health as well, right? I think it does kind of keep me up a little bit at night. And I think the pressure that, you know, here's the thing. I think if you're an elite athlete and you're young, you already put pressure on yourself, right? So my role, I feel, as a parent is to alleviate some of that pressure I see her putting on herself and allow her to have other experiences, right? That don't deter from her, you know, 9 double workouts in a row, right? Like that aren't going to make her go slower in the pool, but I try to strike a balance for her. Cause I think that is so important to keep her whole in many other ways of her life. And that's where I sit on all of this. And my husband said last night, it's a surprising from you. It's a surprising position. Because you would think that I'm all about just grinding out yards in the pool. Mm-hmm. But know that she's 15 and needs to have some balance in her life as well. So I kind of feel like she's going to swim fast. You know, she's going to swim fast and we still got to live a little bit too.
No, it does. It totally does. And the other thing, you know, that these kids have today that we didn't have is their social media. So, you know, they can have a 30-second clip on Instagram in 5 minutes, and there's just the microscope of social media that a lot of athletes live under. It's a great tool for them if they want to connect with fans and things. But when you're younger like this, you know, again, I have a 17-year-old daughter. I try and help her navigate through that. And it's a tricky landscape.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And, you know, I think everything in moderation, I think, is our thing. Swimming in moderation, like, you know, everything in moderation, but it is tricky, because it's, you know, it's a little crazy out there. Very different than when we were growing up, right? Very different.
Yeah, I had Kirk Herbstreit on last year, and we decided that we were happy growing up in the Wonder Years environment instead of the environment that these kids have now. I would definitely take that over this any day of the week. Yes. So I keep that in mind with my own daughter.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And on the flip side, you know, it's fun for her. She follows her favorite swimmers, you know,
right.
Every once in a while we get to go to events where I'm doing something and she gets to meet them. And so I think she's connected to their lives too. So it's motivating too.
Yeah. It's probably cool to have the cool mom that can introduce you to some people. And, she gets to meet some of her favorite people.
Every once in a while I can be cool. You know what I mean? Not all the time.
So you attended Stanford and USC, both great schools. How did those schools help you prepare for life after the Olympics and life after swimming? And, I see you doing a lot of different things now, including being the chief athlete officer. But I'm just, I always ask on this show, how much did you recognize while you were in school? You know what? I need to build relationships and I need to parlay this into the rest of my life, because the truth is you end your athletic career at a pretty young age.
Yeah. So I was 24 when I retired. Back in the 90s, that was old. Now it isn't anymore. But yeah, so I started my career at Stanford, swam there for a couple of years, took some time off to train for the 92 games, actually moved to Austin, train at UT. And then when I left UT to go back to Stanford, my head coach, Mark Schubert, had actually taken the USC job. So I ended up going to USC and training for Mark out of USC through the 96 games. I graduated from SC. My husband went to SC. We are a Trojan family. And with all due respect to Stanford, because I had amazing experiences and memories there as well. And it most certainly shaped me. But ending my career at USC and now living, in Southern California, and, USC is one of our greatest partners at LA 28. We will have our media village there. We will have, incredible, venues from Galen Center to some other temporary venues we're erecting on USC's campus. So, USC really made me who I am today. And I think what USC did to me is I was done with my collegiate career when I got to USC. So they brought me in as a volunteer assistant coach, brought me under their wing, gave me opportunities to train with the US team, with the incredible, facilities and trainers and nutritionists and experts, and really, helped shape who I became as a person, which was, yes, Janet, you are a great swimmer, but we also are going to, you're going to get your degree. We're going to talk. I'm a communications major from the Annenberg School, right? So we're going to teach you how to stand up and speak. And we're going to teach you all of these great things that you need in order to make it. And so, for me, I went to USC at the right time to really understand, that my career was coming to an end. And they really did an incredible job of helping me with that, and continue to do so, right? Because, like I said, they're one of our greatest partners for the LA 28 games. It's always fun to go back on campus and be a Trojan while planning the Olympics and the Paralympics. And to be honest, my first Olympic experience was in the Coliseum in 1984 when I was 12, when I went to the opening ceremonies.
Wow.
Going to USC football games for, half my life now, because now we go as a family, it's really funny, because when they light the cauldron at the end of the third quarter, my kids are always like, let's go get a, popcorn, right? I'm like, no, we're going to wait here for the cauldron to be lit, right? And so to me, I never went into the Coliseum, for a football game or anything else without sitting there thinking, I cannot, it used to be, I hope we can one day bring the Olympics home. And now I can't wait to see the Olympics and the Paralympics here at the Coliseum. So it's, as a Trojan, it's kind of a dream come true.
I love that story. 12-year-old you in 1984 being in the Coliseum, and fast forward to 2028, adult you is bringing the Olympics back to Los Angeles. That's a great story.
Yeah. And, Casey Wasserman has the same story, right? He was at those opening ceremonies as well. So it is a fun story. And, I think once you experience that Olympics, right, it's kind of in your soul, that's what I like to think. And that's why, for me, before we even bid, I would sit in that Coliseum and think, like, look at the amazing opportunities we have here in Los Angeles, and when you speak to people about the Olympics, and we're so excited to bring the Paralympics back to Los Angeles for the first time, but you talk to people about the Olympics and they say, I remember my mom was a volunteer, my grandmother still has her t-shirt, right? So you have like it's, we like to say the Olympics are in the soul of the city of Los Angeles, right? Because people still talk about 84. They still remember 84. They're excited to bring the Olympics back for the third time. They're excited to host the Paralympics because so many of us have these incredible memories from 84 and how it inspired us in our own unique individual ways.
So opening ceremonies would be in the Coliseum, not in SoFi or not in the Rose Bowl, right?
Opening ceremonies will be in both. We're working through that right now, both SoFi and the Coliseum.
I was just down for Super Bowl. I had never been in SoFi. Wow. That place, yeah. I said it on my show last week. That's the nicest venue I've ever been in, and I've been in a lot of venues. It is state of the art.
It is an amazing facility. And the interesting thing is we began our bid, you know, against other European cities, including Paris, who ultimately won the 24 games without SoFi, right? And the plans became, kind of gelled as we were bidding, right? So our initial bid plans didn't even include SoFi. So it was almost like, wow. And now we have this, right? So we're pretty excited. We're really excited about all of the iconic, incredible venues. And like I said, the Coliseum will be the first time in Olympic history that the same venue is used three times. There have been other cities for the games three times, but the beautiful Coliseum will be used for the third Olympic Games, which is, as an Olympic history buff, it's pretty cool.
Well, and I think it's great because there are so many venues that are built for the Olympics and they're used once and you've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on them and then they're never used again. So the fact that there's, some sustainability here with the LA Games, I think is really important.
Yes. And that is, that is what we believe should be the Olympic model, right? We are, fitting ourselves into our city, not moving our city to fit ourselves into it, right? So like we are coming in and we are using existing venues and we're leaving, right? Like look at our village. Our village, as a Trojan, I can say this honestly, our village is amazing at UCLA, right? I go there and I think, man, I want to be a student at UCLA. So our village is in use every single day. The students eat there and they sleep there and they, live there. And so that becomes our village. And what an incredible place. And when the Olympics and the Paralympics are over, it goes back to being clearly dormitory and student housing for the students at UCLA. So if you really look at our plan, the sustainability aspect of it is second to none because we are not building new venues to host our Olympic and Paralympic Games.
I mean, I really think there should be like four host cities in the world and they just rotate. And LA should be one of them. You have a European city, you have an Asian city, but why are we going all over the place building venues that aren't being used again? Like, I really think if we want to look at sustainability and reusing these venues, you narrow it down, almost like the Super Bowl. There's five or six cities that rotate and have the Super Bowl. Don't you think that would be most effective as the Olympic model?
Yeah, I think the IOC has their reasons for what they do. And I think some of it is, is inclusivity of differing host nations. I think that is a discussion that has been had many times and discussed many times, I think, at the IOC level.
All right, let's end with this. You talked about iconic moments and cauldron lightings. You were part of maybe the most iconic cauldron lighting, in the last 100 years, Muhammad Ali, 1996 in Atlanta. And, you were part of that. You handed the torch to him. Most people didn't know that he was a part of that. Walk us through like the feelings you had and how you got selected for that. And what was your interaction with Muhammad Ali?
Sure. So, hands down, my greatest Olympic moment as an athlete was that, lighting of the cauldron with Ali. I had been a part of the organizing and bid committee for the Atlanta Games, surprisingly, when I was in college. So had worked somewhat on that, organizational structure of bringing the games to Atlanta, and was asked by the chairman, Billy Payne, probably about 4 or 5 weeks out. He did not tell me it was going to be Ali that was going to light the cauldron. He saved that for our rehearsal the evening before. And we had some alternative plans in case there was problems at top with Ali being able to light the cauldron. So if you look at the wide shots, my torch is still lit. while he is lighting the cauldron, because we just wanted to make sure that nothing happened up there and the flame wasn't extinguished. So I like to say I'd give up every medal to live that moment again, because I think it goes back to some of the things we've been talking about. I was, you know, it was my third Olympic Games. I wasn't swimming as well as I used to. I was kind of wondering what was going to be next in my life. And my identity was really wrapped around, you know, Janet Evans, the Olympic swimmer, winning, right? Like winning was what I'd been bred to do. And, you know, for me, you know, when I was asked to run the torch, you know, my first thought was, well, it's going to make my legs tired. I have to swim the next day. And common sense prevailed and I agreed to do it. But I have to admit, I was not very focused on it. I just wanted to go swim because I wanted to win, because that's what I was supposed to do. So, you know, I received the torch from Evander Holyfield. I'm running around the stadium. I go up the three long ramps, and I'm looking around and I see all these athletes, and, you know, they're, most of the 90% of the athletes compete at the Olympics and the Paralympics do not win medals, right? But as I was running and I watched the athletes' reaction to this torch, I kind of realized that it was about a lot more than winning. Mm-hmm. And I'm having this epiphany, and I'm running, and I get to the top, and there's Ali, and, you know, I can't, it's very, very, I've spent many years trying to explain it, but there was a look in his eye, right? And I knew the second I looked at him that we were going to have no problem lighting that cauldron. He was there, he was present, he was determined to make this work. And, you know, we didn't speak up there because it was so loud, because everyone was chanting, you know, Ali, Ali, Ali. And just to stand there with him and watch him in this moment. And I think anyone who is in that stadium can tell you what it personally meant to them to watch him do that. And for me, what it meant was, you don't have to win, right? Ali was standing there in front of the world saying, you know what? my hand might be shaking, but I'm going to light this cauldron to celebrate this incredible athletic event. And I'm going to show you that, you know, no matter what your circumstance, you can stand up and be present and make a difference. And, you know, I think that was his message with those, you know, personally, that's what I think his message was with the lighting of that cauldron. I think it inspires me every day. And I think it is really part of who I am, because it goes back to what we were talking about. I think for all of us as athletes, there comes a time that we're never going to be able to get in the swimming pool and swim as well as we used to, or box as well as we used to. But we do have to stand up and make a difference and continue to use our platforms to change people's lives. And that's what I think the meaning of being an athlete is. And that's why I think I feel grateful that I'm allowed to continue to do this job, because I really do hope I'm making a difference. And I got to be honest, it was Ali who inspired me. So truly my greatest Olympic moment, and becoming his friend, you know, was one of the greatest honors of my life. And, you know, now that he's not with us, you know, I tell the story a lot, because it was an important moment for many people, for the Olympic movement. You know, it was, you know, an amazing moment. And so I enjoy telling the story, and I like, you know, carrying the torch, if you will, about that moment, because it was so, so important for all of us.
I love it. I've had the honor of being in the same room with him, and I don't know that I've ever been around another human being who had the same kind of presence that he had. I don't know that I can explain it, but it's just a different presence than anyone else has. And I can only imagine being in that stadium with people chanting his name and that many people in the room. Like, that had to have been, like you said, you trade all your medals for that experience again. And I just think it's great that you are now in the role that you're in, with you know, all your experience as an Olympian. You know, you were at the 1984 Olympic Games. You just described what happened in 96. Like, I honestly, Janet, I don't think they could have picked anyone better to be in your role than you.
Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate it. And like I said, it's truly an honor for me to be able to do this. And I hope I carry the torch for all these young athletes, and because they're probably up this morning before me training, getting ready to compete in 28. So I hope I can help make the experience great for them.
Janet Evans, four-time Olympic gold medalist swimmer, chief athlete officer for LA 28. Follow her on Twitter at Janet Evans. Janet, thank you so much for joining me on Sports Business Radio. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Brian. I'll come back anytime. Just let me know.
Thank you. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. This edition of Sports Business Radio is presented by Roan. They are the new official menswear partner of Sports Business Radio. I absolutely love their product. I've been a fan of their company for many years now. Roan makes the absolute highest quality, best fitting, and most comfortable performance-driven clothing for men. Their entire line places emphasis on an active, balanced, and purpose-driven lifestyle. I've been wearing their Mako short and Rain Tech long sleeve for all of my gym sessions. When I'm in person with people, I've been wearing the commuter pant and the commuter shirt. They're both very comfortable. Roan's flex knit fabric revamps a timeless silhouette and creates a pant that moves with my lifestyle. Same thing with their shirt. And then when I'm working from home, like right now I'm recording in my Spar jogger pants, I wear my Guru pants and my Rain Tech hoodie. They become some of my favorite items to wear when I'm working from home. And also, when I'm out and about, it's been cold here in Oregon. So I've got my Tundra quilted hooded jacket. It's my favorite jacket now. It keeps me warm, but it's not big and bulky. Roan is offering Sports Business Radio podcast listeners 15% off your next purchase. Go to roan.com and enter promo code SBR15 at checkout to receive 15% off your purchase. That's roan.com, R-H-O-N-E.com, and enter code SBR15 at checkout. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our show staff, Brian Griggs and Josh Blank. And thanks to our partner, Malka Sports, for powering Sports Business Radio. Learn more about them online at malkasports.com. That's M-A-L-K-A sports.com. For Brian Griggs, I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
This and every SBR podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and your favorite listening app. Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, Twitter at SB Radio, Instagram at Sports Business Radio, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. Sports Business Radio is produced by Brian Griggs and Griggs Productions, griggsproductions.com.